No, he won't.
It brings a little bit of the war closer to us.
Bob Hope visits the troops. Blankets for Britain? Blankets for Britain? I remember bundles for Britain.
They mentioned both within in that particular show. But don't you remember the term blankets for Britain?
No.
I guess I remember it's something my mother used to say, and I'm sure she got the same from...
Burns and Allen, Arms for the Love of America, a World War II song. Superman. And, boy,
everyone got involved in the war effort.
The Uncle Sam show. Spurdvac is a terrific organization. We'll tell you a little bit about Spurdvac as we go along. But first, let's listen to Hi Ho the Radio from 1940. It was kind of radio's theme song, wasn't it?
Right. We always try to bring something to get us in the mood. So here it is.
Radio, 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 hi ho. To you, wherever you may go, you hear a radio.
In a car, at a bar,
makes no difference where you are, there's one beside your bed. In every big hotel, and soon they'll have a radio in every prison cell. With radios and taxi cabs, the driver's life is sweeter, because it makes the passenger forget to read the meter. They're building model houses now with one in every room. A woman shot her husband too. Of love in bloom. I hold the radio, it's time to take a pill.
Your best friend wouldn't tell you.
No, but some announcer will.
Yeah.
I hold the radio, they play a lovely waltz to get you in the mood.
To buy a certain dose of salt.
They give you testimonials from poets and palookas, with mandolins and violins and trumpets and bazookas. Melody and ballyhoo, music, music from the blue. All it means is no to you. R-A-D-I-O.
He sounded something like the Sportsman.
Yes, I really don't know who it was. We just came across that song. But it certainly was a catchy tune, wasn't it?
It was, it was. And now the rest of these will have something to do with troops coming home or troops going overseas. And this is part of the collection from the archives of Spurdvac. A collection that started many years ago as people would donate, well, in those days it was shellac, really, the oversized records. And from shellac you guys made tape.
That's right. Both. Excuse me. I have one of those colds that a lot of people have had. From
For a minute,
discs.
I thought I was talking to Andy Devine.
From the discs, we make tapes, both on reel-to-reel or cassette, and as members, you can take them out of our libraries.
For very little money. I mean, just for the cost of... it's like a lending...
Right, it's a nonprofit group, and it's just sharing the different shows.
We'll tell you more about it, but let's listen now to the Fibber McGee and Molly show of December 1st, 1942, with Jim and Marion Jordan.
Well, mileage rationing has just come to Wistful Vista. And in spite of its being a meatless day, get a load of the beef being put up by an average citizen as we meet Fibber McGee and Molly.
I tell you, it ain't fair, Molly. They can't do this to me. 4 gallons a week. Why, that's ridiculous.
I think so, too.
You do?
Yes, you don't need 4 gallons.
Doggone it, I do, too. 4 gallons is outrageous. Where can I go on 4 gallons of gas?
Where do you want to go, dearie?
Well, gee whiz, what if I did want to go someplace? In an emergency or something.
You mean like running out of cigars?
Yes, or no. Running out of cigars, agency.
You never spoke a truer word, McGee.
Huh?
When I get a whiff of those poison panatellas of yours, I know why tobacco auctioneers talk that way.
What you mean?
Those fellas are hysterical.
Oh, forget my cigars. I'm talking about this mileage rationing. I think it's a dirty deal. The whole thing is silly. It's going to make everybody stay at home. Why, in 2 years, a guy from Indiana won't know what a guy from Kansas is talking about.
Where are you from?
Illinois.
That it's happened already. I don't even know what you're talking about.
I'm talking about giving all the car owners a measly little medicine dropper full of gasoline. It's an infringement on private rights. That's what it is.
Look, dearie, look. The main reason they're rationing gasoline is to save tires. Don't you know that if we continue driving like we have been, a majority of automobiles will be off the road next year?
Good. There's too much traffic anyway. Too crowded. Get the cars off the road. That'll be fine. That's swell.
Well, I'm glad you feel that way because yours will probably be one of them.
What? Me give up my car? Oh, no, you don't. I paid for my tires, and by the left hind leg of Leon Henderson, I got a right. I'm going to write to my congressman this very minute.
Who is our congressman?
Why, it's old... I don't know. Who is he?
Oh, just send it to the congressman from this district.
Okay, that's exactly what I'll... What district is this?
Maybe you better write to our senator.
That's better yet. I'll tell him I'm not going to stand for any such... Who's our senator?
Did they come out of vaudeville, Fibber McGee?
Right, they came out of vaudeville, and they started in radio on a show called Smack Out. They were supposed to be proprietors of a grocery store, and they became Smack Out of Everything in 1931, and their show ran until 59.
What did they do in vaudeville? Was it like a Burns and Allen?
I believe so, yes. I haven't actually heard any recordings of it, but I believe that's what it was, and it grew into... What it was, and as we've said so often in these years of playing radio excerpts, we're still laughing at it today.
Some of them.
Sure.
Fibber McGee and Molly, yes. Jack Benny, yes. Some don't hold up.
No.
And it's hard to figure out why.
It is. Humor's a funny thing, but this certainly does hold up.
The Goldbergs were such a warm and wonderful program.
They were. And this particular show that we're playing isn't exactly a Goldberg soap opera. It's a Goldbergs from a Victory Front. And Victory Front was a recording that was done in Washington for the war, a propaganda shows for the war. And they took various soap operas and did a week of them, accenting the patriotic influence. That's why we chose it today. And these were from a trade that Joe did with someone, your show for my show, and they sent him, and these were said to be rare recordings. It's a perfect example of Spurdback in that we can find some things that you might normally that you wouldn't normally hear.
Program is called Victory Front, and this segment was recorded November 27th, 1942.
The Victory Front, presented by the United States government, brings you the Goldbergs. The United States government has the pleasure of bringing you a new series of programs, a different kind of series. During these programs, the people many of us know and love, people we meet every day on the radio, have volunteered to visit here at the same time each weekday on the Victory Front. Now, speaking for the United States government, here is Irene Wicker.
The Victory Front features the Goldbergs this week. Followed and loved by millions of Americans, the story of the Goldbergs typifies those families of America who are showing the strength of character, the courage and the fortitude that are needed to help shape our future. Today, as we visit the Goldbergs once again, we shall see what Molly does about a problem that concerns every one of us who is wondering about the world we're going to live in tomorrow.
Well, Molly almost accomplished a miracle yesterday. She got her cousin Basha to give her consent to a wedding. Cousin Basha couldn't see that her daughter should marry a young man whose future was bounded by an army camp and war. Love, the times, the new ways of living caused by this immense struggle to achieve a victory for human rights. All these mattered little besides Basha's interest in a three-room apartment and other incidentals of a peacetime marriage. But Molly took Basha in hand, and the wedding is on. And today, Molly ties every strand together in a personal victory which predicts the victory we all should have. Listen.
Yes, darling.
Yes, darling. Yes, darling. Yes. 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 Fix my tie, please.
Yes, please.
Please, fix
yes.
It.
Yes.
You know.
All right. Oh, stay with darling.
You know how?
Yes, please. Why don't I know how?
Yes, please.
You see, darling, we're going to have a wedding, huh?
Yes, lass.
Oh, my.
The only thing I'm changing for the wedding is my tie.
It's all right. Yes.
That was it?
That was it.
That was the whole 2 minutes.
You'll just have to tune in tomorrow.
25. Tune in to the next war, I guess. The Victory Fronts with Molly Goldberg. We were just debating whether or not there were two Mrs. Goldberg, seems to me that there was. There was one that played the part on television or maybe in a movie.
Well, that's certainly possible in a movie, because I think that Gertrude Berg played it on television at least for part of the time.
You know, who played a part was very badly miscast.
No.
That was similar to Molly Goldberg was Rosalind Russell.
Really?
Yes.
Now we're talking television now?
Yes, we're talking movies. She played the part of the Jewish widow who fell in love with a Japanese gentleman. And I forget, it was from a famous play. It was not her best...
No, probably not. But Gertrude Berg certainly was a good Jewish mother, wasn't she?
She was wonderful on both television. That was her. And radio, you almost felt as though you were part of that family.
Yes.
And
pleasant.
They looked great on television.
Oh, they did. They did. Can't you see her sitting at the window? Looking out, she used to talk
you.
A lot sitting at the window.
Yeah. There's another victory front that follows this. Let's listen to that, and then we'll talk a little bit about Spurdback. This is Victory Front 1942. An original soap opera called Give Us This Day was made just for Victory Front, it says here. Sinclair Lewis introduces...
Right, that's why we chose this particular one, because of the Sinclair Lewis name. And as you said, it was made just for this. It wasn't... The other Victory Fronts were all the normal soap operas that everybody listened to day in and day out. They took them with a patriotic theme. They also made some that were special for this, so they could intertwine their own stories.
This was recorded in 1942. Let's listen.
The government of the United States has the pleasure of bringing its listeners a new series of programs, a different kind of series. During these programs, the people that many of us know and love, people we meet every day on the radio, have volunteered their services to the government and are going to visit here on the Victory Front. Now, speaking for the United States government, here is Sinclair Lewis.
This week, the Victory Front features an original, specially prepared five-part story entitled Give Us This Day. If you've listened to the programs on the Victory Front, you know that the people you meet every day, facing the same intimate problems we all face, were concerned with doing all they could on the home front to help our boys on the fighting front. Well, in Give Us This Day, some typical American people picture for you a wartime subject. The key upon which depends all our efforts, food for freedom.
And now, Give Us This Day by Lawrence Mencken and Elwood Hoffman.
Give us this day our daily bread, for the strength we need to fight for a free world, for the strength we need to make possible the world of tomorrow, in which all men, regardless of race, creed, or color, will have equal opportunities to earn their daily bread.
Well, Mom, I didn't run away after all. Jeff believed my story about Floyd and said he had to be shown up and that I could help. So I decided to stay. Mrs. Williams and Alicia were worried because Mr. Williams hadn't come home. And Jeff and I finally found him unconscious in Floyd's ice plant. Someone had beaten him around the head. Mr. Ellis was standing over him, but...
In 1942, when that was recorded... The war did not look bright. The chances for victory were kind of up in the air. We suffered defeat after defeat in the Pacific. It took a long time for that to be turned around and for the momentum to be gained. And that was true also in Europe. The early days of the war were not wonderful days. Certainly Britain was battered. And so these shows, I think, reflect that. They talk about victory, but they talk about it almost tentatively.
Sure, it wasn't real upbeat, but yet it was trying to give people hope.
And there was tight censorship. We didn't count our losses as we do today. There were very few body counts and that type of thing.
It was definitely pre-CNN, wasn't it?
It was, and probably nobody complained about it. I think that it was essential that a lot of that war be censored.
Definitely.
A lot of the news be censored. But
certainly.
There were some great and bright shining stars that came out of the media. Edward R. Murrow and Gabriel Heater.
Yes. Certainly there aren't as many people today, I don't think, in the same way. Maybe there are stars, but it's a different kind.
But they seem a little silly today. They seem as though they're chasing that image, the trench coat. I mean, there they are in Saudi Arabia, standing before the camera. And what are they doing there? What can they possibly learn in Saudi Arabia that they can't learn in Topeka, Kansas?
Certainly. Well, the immediacy of television is different than the radio. It wasn't immediate then, was it?
No. No, it wasn't, although this was immediate, and we will listen to it in a few moments. The shortwave from the BBC, that pretty much told it as it happened. You could hear sometimes the bombs dropping.
Yes, and this particular recording is a little distorted just because it is from shortwave, as if you're listening to shortwave today. It's not always perfect, but it certainly is interesting.
Well, let's go ahead then and listen to it. This is Listening Post, and this was recorded January 2nd, 1944, and as Susan said, it's shortwave from the BBC World Services. It says, Germany distorts the war news.
This is London calling in the North American service of the BBC. Listening post is given by James Ferguson. Today's German communique admits both the loss of Novgorod on the Volkhov sector of the Russian front and of Mentone on the western Italian front. It offers a consolation for the loss of Mentone by saying all other attacks and enemy attempts to cross the Garigliano were repelled. Thus, the German High Command officially denies the crossing of this river 3 days after it took place. On the other hand, the German Transocean Agency, whose supply of news is not for the European audience, put out an admission that the troops of the Fifth Army had crossed the river only a few minutes before the High Command's denial was broadcast. Another statement by this same German agency early this afternoon was attributed to a German military spokesman. He was reported to have said that during the last 24 hours, American troops fighting in the western sector of the Italian front have been replaced to a large extent by British troops because of the severe losses which, according to him, the American force has suffered during the first 24 hours of the new attack. Slow progress and heavy losses have been the two principal contentions made by German propaganda about our Italian campaign.
Stay informed 24 hours a day on KIEV Glendale, Los Angeles, 870 on the AM dial.
Susan Crawford in studio, and she's one of the founders of Spurdvac, the Society to Preserve and Encourage Radio, Drama, Variety, and Comedy. And Spurdvac is a wonderful organization. Tell them a little bit about it.
Spurdvac is a group of people that are interested in radio, both old and new, mostly non-professional people. We just like radio. It meets once a month in the Valley or in Orange County. We have a meeting on the second Saturday afternoon of a month, have a guest speaker. We've had your friend Jim Hawthorne come. We've had Jim Jordan come. Almost anybody who's anybody comes for talks for a couple hours about their career, life in radio, and then you leave. If you join, you receive a catalog of shows. You take it out. It's a lending library. It's all done by mail. You choose cassette or reel-to-reel. There's also a monthly newsletter, which gives you items of interest to an old radio fan as well as things that are going on currently.
But the library is terrific because these radio programs cover every single category from the suspense series to comedy to music to newscasts to soap operas.
I don't think there's a category we don't have. And if we don't have a particular show, as a member, you meet people who are also radio collectors. Like I said, mentioned we got the Victory Front from someone, I think, who lived in, I'll say, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And we wrote to him and gave him some of our shows that we had that he was looking for, and vice versa. So there's a trading that goes on among the members besides just with the the catalog in the, of the club.
What does it cost to join Spurtback?
It costs $25 to join Spurtback. It's a year membership. And renewals, I believe, are $15. I'll probably get that wrong, but renewals are a little less. Mm-hmm. They can write for information or call any one of two numbers. Would this be a good time to give those, Paul?
Sure.
They can write to our post office box, and we actually have, after 16 years, a new post office box number. So I best look at it, or I will... It took me 15 years of the 16, I think, to get the other one right. This is Post Office Box 7177, 7177 in Van Nuys, 91409. Or even easier, perhaps, if they'd like information, they can dial in the 213 area, 947-9800, or in the 714 area, 524-6888, and find out anything they want to know. Our May 11th meeting will be at the South Pasadena Library. We vary our locations a little bit to try to encompass more people. And Bob Dwan will be our guest. You probably know him from the Groucho
sure.
days. He's a very nice gentleman. Used to be involved in Variety Arts, I believe is where I first met him, when Milt Larson had it downtown. Mm-hmm. But he was involved in the radio days, and People Are Funny, and Groucho Marx particularly, as a producer, director type, and he'll be reliving those days.
Okay. To continue on through the tapes, the little snippets of history that Spurtback provides us from time to time, and today we're looking and listening to tapes that have to do with returning troops or the war, essentially World War II. Let's listen to an excerpt of the Bob Hope Show from Camp Roberts, and this was recorded sometime in the early 1940s.
Thank you. Oh, it's been a great day here at Camp Roberts for the Army. And you know, we've covered plenty of land, sea, and air since Pearl Harbor and visited many a vital cog in our fighting machine. But tonight we're face to face with number one boy in the armed forces, the man in the infantry, Johnny Doughboy himself. When you snap on your radio these days, you hear the roaring dramas of men who fly through steel and fire to sink a Jap carrier or blast a Nazi submarine, then come limping home on a wing and a prayer. But we don't hear much about a guy with a stripe in his sleeve and a gun in his arm who's the biggest hero of them all. He's just plain Joe Infantry. All-around soldier who stands with his 2 feet on the ground and slugs out the final round of every fight. He's the man who stormed to the top of Hill 164, fighting through more hell per square foot than any man has ever known. The fellow who swept down the other side of Tunis and Bizerte, a little closer to Berlin. And he's the guy who tonight is pushing through the red and white snow of Attu Island, a little closer to Tokyo. Just plain Joe Infantry. No silver wings, no glamour. But, mister, he's the guy who day and night, and I mean every day and night, is taking his country a little closer to victory. Good night, fellas.
And, of course, Bob Hope has been doing every war since the Civil War.
Sure, yeah, just about. I know when I'm going to bring an excerpt, I usually look up when their shows first began, when they ended. He began in 35, but there wasn't an ending date, is there?
My gosh.
And he's still going.
It's amazing. Now, this is the program that we were talking about. I had not heard of Blankets for Britain. To me, it was always Bundles for Britain. I love the character actor, Frank Morgan, who
yes.
Is in this particular cut. And again, this is somewhere in the 1940s.
Right, and this is a dramatization of their appeal to us to send the bundles of blankets, if you will, to Britain.
Let's listen.
I mean blankets. They're scarce, miss. People are dying for want of them. Little children are cold and sick because they ain't got them. We know that. I know it. You know it. The king knows it. But what can he do? Do we get blankets by crying for them? No, that ain't playing the game, miss. That ain't carrying on.
I know it isn't.
Oh, don't be hard on her, mister.
Why not? She ain't doing her duty, and in this war, even a little lad in your arms is a soldier. There's only one thing you can do about blankets, miss. You can get down on your knees and pray God that someone in a quieter, cozier land will send us some. And you can pray that if they fail you, you'll have the courage to go on fighting without them. Yeah, that's the all clear. We can go, I fancy.
Mister, I didn't know. I'm terribly ashamed. Here's your coat.
Now, keep it, miss.
May we? Mother hasn't even a sweater, you know.
That's the way I like to hear talk. Get Mother to wear it, and when you look at it, remember Queen Bess and Queen Victoria and what I told you about them. They weren't the grousing kind, not them.
Mister, you didn't mean what you said about England falling, did you?
Of course not. I said it to rouse you, miss. But don't forget to pray for blankets. Somewhere, miss, there are lucky people who's got blankets they ain't even using. People with warm homes and quiet nights. Lummy, think of it.
I'd forgotten there were such people.
But they ain't forgotten us. When they understand our need, we'll have more blankets than we can shake a stick at.
When will they understand?
I don't know, miss. We can only hope it'll be soon. Let's hope that every time a man turns up his collar or reaches for another log for his fire or shovels coal in his furnace, that he'll remember us. And that every time a woman steps into a nursery to cover a baby or looks out the window at the snow or snuggles down into her cozy bed, that she'll think of us and remember that it's a long way till springtime. And now, miss, I gotta be on me way. I'm working on airplane engines and I'm late.
Goodbye, mister.
Goodbye, Elizabeth.
Before we say goodbye and thank you for your generous gifts, may I present Mr. Morgan.
Ladies and gentlemen, I wonder if you know how fortunate you are to be living in the United States. But did you ever stop to think about those who are not so fortunate, particularly the children? When a bomb strikes a home, there's literally nothing left. And many a poor mother is going to be frantic this winter. Will even take her own coverings to keep her children warm.
Actually, that was, I think, followed by the campaign Kleenex for Britain, where they had people sending... This next one is Burns and Allen. Not quite as heavy-handed. I think that the blankets for Britain, I mean, that was real heavy-duty propaganda.
Well, certainly. Certainly. They had some of each, didn't they? Just like today, some shows are have different aims. Burns and Allen certainly makes you laugh. George is still around, isn't he?
Yes, he is, and will be, hopefully, for many more years. This is, Burns and Allen was recorded at near the end of the war, I guess. I don't know whether it was at the end of the war or near the end of the war. June 25th, 1945. Let's listen.
And now, Swan, the white floating soap that's pure as fine Castiles, brings you George Burns and Gracie Allen. With the music of Felix Mills, the Swan Tet, and yours truly, Harry Von Zell. Well, next week, George and Gracie are leaving for a tour of camps and hospitals to entertain our servicemen.
Now, here's my plan. First, the paper boy comes and leaves the paper.
Yeah.
And then the milkman comes, reads the paper, and leaves the milk. Then the postman comes, drinks the milk, and leaves the mail. Then the baker man comes, reads the mail, and leaves the bread. Now, the bread sits on the porch all day, and the sun toasts it. Next morning, the paper boy eats the toast and leaves the paper. Mm. Then the milkman comes, reads the paper, and leaves the milk.
I know how it goes from there. That I know. Now, let's take one thing at a time. You expect the sun to toast the bread?
Well, George, this is California. The sun always... Better leave the toaster out, huh?
Connect it. Listen, Gracie, I've got a little suggestion. Why not stop the paper, the milk, and the bakery?
Darling, that's a brilliant idea. I think it's even better than mine.
Even.
George, you're a genius.
Oh, sure.
That's not just a cabbage sitting on your shoulders.
Thanks.
That cabbage has got brains in it.
It's a nice little TL. Let's just take the key to our house over to Harry Bonzell's and ask his mother to keep an eye on things first.
What for?
So burglars can't come in and carry off the furniture.
Oh, don't worry about that. I'll figure out a burglar trap. We'll run the garden hose into the living room and fix it so that if a burglar opens a window or a door, it turns on the hose.
Sounds logical to me.
They were good. I mean, the Burns and Allen shows, I think, hold up well.
Oh.
And if people belong to Spurdvac and wanted to check them out, they could do that.
They would be coming to the right place, that's for sure.
And as we mentioned before, Jack Benny holds up well. I don't think Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy would hold up well.
Not quite as well. Some of their shows are certainly funny. Red Skelton? Fairly well. If you liked it the first time. Remember, you have to think about that, too, how well...
Well, he was a sensation when he was first on the air with his Guzzler's Gin routine and that kind of thing. He also was, and people are surprised to hear this, maybe the greatest nightclub performer in comedy that ever existed. I mean, I saw him in Las Vegas, and he would come out on stage, and he would do a thing that was half pantomime and half routine. And that audience was just enthralled. I had no idea. I did not particularly like him until I saw him in
the in-person show.
Yeah.
Hasn't he done a few of those shows even last year? It seems to me it was at the Long Beach Civic.
Might have, but they were certainly great shows. This is this next tape is a song that I guess was popular in the 40s. Called Arms for the Love of America. Where was that from?
I'm not sure how popular it was. This particular tape, which came to Spurdvac's attention, was from a tape that someone had put together called The World War II in Song and Sound. And it has a lot of patriotic-type songs. They remind you of the movies of the era where there's 10,000 soldiers marching in. And this is a catchy little tune. I don't know how popular it was, but it's certainly fun and indicative of the era, to say the least.
Let's listen.
In every hand, whatever they try, we've got a reply in language that they understand. Arms for the love of America, and for the love of every mother's son, who's depending on the work that must be done by the man behind the gun. They're in the camps and in the trenches. Now give them the tools.
Give them the tools.
Give them the arms.
Give them the arms. They got to have arms. Arms for the love of America. We got to get in the rain and work at a lively pace. They say over here we've nothing to fear, but let's get ready just in case. Arms for the love of America. And for the love of every mother's son. For the fight for freedom can be lost or won by the man behind the gun.
Language they understand?
We speak it, brother. Speak it loud.
We speak it in the mines and mills, munition plants, assembly lines, and navy yards and factories.
You want to hear a word or two? Okay, here's how that language sounds.
Yeah, the stutter of rivet guns, the whir of lathes, the clang of steel. That's the language they understand.
We speak it, brother. Speak it loud.
We're American working men.
Behind the man, behind the gun.
We forge the arms, we roll the steel, refine the oil, machine the parts, make powder and aluminum, engines, mortars, and merchantmen, and tanks and shells and fighting planes.
That's the language they understand.
We swing a sledge or draw a plan. We run a press or set a gauge. We drive a truck or keep the books. We work with muscle or with brain. Whatever job, it's one job now. Arms, more arms for America.
That's the language they understand.
Month on month, we make thousands of planes.
Just a whisper, wait till we shout.
More thousands of engines for them.
Just a whisper, wait till we shout.
Rifles and cannon, thousands of them. Merchant ships, thousands of tons. Millions of tons of steel. Millions of barrels of oil. Millions, millions,
figures,
millions.
Figures, figures, wait till we shout. Louder and louder, day by day. In tanks and shells and fighting planes, engines, mortars, and merchantmen, until they quiver at the sound.
That's the language they understand.
I was sitting here jotting down some of the songs in the war. There were some really fantastic songs.
Oh, sure, and there's a lot of them are still sung today.
Well, I don't know. I mean,
not by your groups today, but you still hear some of them.
I Don't Want to Walk Without You, Baby was a war song. He Wears a Pair of Silver Wings, that was Dinah Shore. I'll Never Smile Again.
Oh, yes.
Let's see. I Missed the Saturday Dance.
Oh, that's a great one.
Don't Sit Under the Apple Tree.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
Boogie Woogie Boo Boy.
I Threw a Kiss in the Ocean. That was also a Dinah Shore one.
Bluebirds Over the White Cliffs of
Yeah,
Dover.
Yeah, that was a grabber.
Yeah.
Three Sisters.
I don't know that.
There are three little sisters.
Oh, yes.
One married a sailor, one married a soldier, and one married a guy in the Marines. Was the way the words
sounds
went.
Sounds very patriotic.
Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Ender Fuhrer's Face.
Mm-hmm.
Spike Jones' contribution to the...
There were all types, weren't there?
But there were some... I mean, those songs were just gorgeous. So romantic.
Yes, I agree.
There's never been songs like that since that time. I don't think World War One. I went around in World War One, but I don't think... That produced the music World War II produced.
No, certainly it was.
A Nightingale Sang in Berkeley Square.
Yeah.
I mean, we could probably go on for hours, and maybe we will.
Maybe we'll even sing a few.
But somebody who was around in World War I and could probably remember all of those songs is Bill Gahr. He was a bugle boy. He
was he?
He
yeah.
played the horse race theme during World War I, and we're now going to join Bill Gahr at the racetrack. This is Paul Wallach along with Steve Knight. We've already begun our 16th year, as a matter of fact. Yesterday began our 16th year. And we have in studio Susan Crawford of Spurred Back, the Society to Preserve and Encourage Radio Drama, Variety, and Comedy. And we've been listening to excerpts from old radio shows that had to do with patriotism and troops going overseas and coming home. We have, I think, just one. No, we have two more cuts to listen to. This one is from the Superman radio show that was recorded February 23rd, 1945. Had that been on a long time?
I don't actually have a beginning date, but I think it had been on a couple years. And, of course, Superman, like everyone else today, became involved in the war.
And it was a very popular show?
It was popular, sure. Do you not remember listening as a kid? You don't?
No, I remember a lot of shows that nobody else has ever heard of. Mm-hmm. Sean Do the Magician and those kind of...
Well, I'll tell you, I've heard it was a popular show. The funny thing in looking these up, it's not listed in my radio book. That's why I didn't have a date. But I know in talking to people, a lot of people remember Superman.
Maybe it's listed under The Adventures of...
Well, that's possible.
That's possible. Let's listen to Superman, February 23rd, 1945.
Stepping out into the bitter Arctic cold, Jimmy and Foco march across the snow-packed compound to where the Nazi firing squad awaits them. Meanwhile, hurtling northward above the sea, Superman scans all below him. Ah, there's another iceberg filled with explosives. Down and smash it. Down! That does it. Now, up into the north again. Away! I ought to be somewhere near where those icebergs start from. Not much open sea left. Up ahead is frozen solid, so... Uh-oh, what's that? Working on the ice. They're dynamiting the frozen sea. And there's another crew. Drilling the icebergs and filling them with explosives. Oh, the end of the trail at last. Faster! Now they're going to get a surprise. Wait a minute. That farther ahead in that big snow yard. German soldiers. A firing squad. Great Scott, that's Jim and Poco in front of that firing squad. Faster! Faster! Now, down and grab them. Down!
Swooping down from the sky, Superman snatches Jimmy and Poco to safety even as the Nazi guns roar. Then, setting them down a mile away, he leaves them too stunned for speech and streaks back to teach the amazed Germans in the compound a grim lesson. Several hours later, once more in his guise of the mild-mannered Clark Kent, he enters the city room of the Daily Planet and proceeds to Editor White's office, where Jimmy is excitedly telling his story.
Superman
set
Pogo down,
dragged
and
hunted
all the Nazis and turned them over to the Eskimos.
Yeah, he did, eh?
Uh-huh, he said... Oh, hello, Mr. Kent.
Hello, Jim. How are you, Chief? Stop interrupting.
What?
Go on, Olson. You say Superman turned the Nazis over to the Eskimos?
Uh-huh. He said the Eskimos could hold trials for the Nazis and do whatever they wanted.
Those had to be the dumbest people in the world. Now, how could they not know that Clark Kent was Superman? All he did was put on a pair of glasses, and suddenly nobody could figure out who he was. Didn't even recognize him.
He was pretty clever, wasn't he?
I don't know. I just think though they were dumb. I would. If Steve didn't wear his glasses, I would recognize him in a minute. This last bit that we're listening to, and all these tapes are through the courtesy of Spurdvac. And the Spurdvac telephone number for information is?
In the 714 area, 524-6888, or in the 213 area, 947-9800.
Okay. This is called The Uncle Sam Show with Captain Glenn Miller and the Army Air Force Band.
From the United States of America to the other United Nations of the world, Uncle Sam presents the band of the training command of the Army Air Forces under the direction of Captain Glenn Miller with Corporal Ray McKinley and many of your old friends. And here is Captain Glenn Miller.
Thank you, Lieutenant Donald Briggs, and hello, everybody. First off, the band plays a new tune by Private Jerry Gray, The Jeep Jockey Jump.
And again, Susan, we thank you very much. And we're going to take a break. We'll look for you about a month. You'll surprise us with some more tapes.
I will try. Thanks.
Okay. We'll be back after these words.